operator, put him on hold. Sorry, I have to get to the persons in charge of that county. I don't do that, I don't work that area. So there's a few seconds that takes place, the shift, he's screaming on the phone, or you gotta get some people out here, need some help. They shift him over to another 911 dispatcher for that area. She asks him, where do you live? Where is this at? I don't know. He did not know the physical address of where the school was at. Kept trying to tell her the school road and the intersection of, and all this is taking up time on this 911 call. Going back to the schoolhouse, the teacher went out, she ran out. The fact is, what he said is not exactly what happened. The teacher's one of the first to go out, along with the boys. The boys ran out, the school teacher ran out and ran down to the barn. Meanwhile, I even need to back up before that. The white pickup that you saw parked in front of the schoolhouse, what the man did, he had backed up that pickup, and in the pickup he had the 2x6s, nails, he had two buckets of other types of articles. And some of those things was nails and fasteners, eye bolts. He already had eye bolts drilled into these 2x6s that he had, which means he had planned out. The fact is, they discovered later that he had bought those eye bolts 2 weeks before. This guy had it well planned out. 2 weeks before, about what he's going to do. Anyway, he had the boys carry the van. He carried in two buckets that had some toilet paper. It had KY jelly, vagina jelly. Obviously, he was going to sexually molest him. He already had that figured out. He had them carry all that stuff in. He then let the boys go. The teacher who was pregnant, and two or three other females, he let them go. And then he started nailing the doors and stuff shut. In the meantime, the man's name is Sketchy Zook. Yeah, Mr. Zook, who was the owner of the farm that the teacher ran to, ran back to the farmhouse to see what he could do. And he looked in the window to try and determine what was going on. He was the last person to see what was going on inside of the schoolhouse. In the meantime, the first state trooper got there. In fact, he went past it and he saw Zook and he turned around and came back. Zook pointed out it, told him what was going on. He started calling for help, calling for a SWAT. This incident, this one incident, has changed the whole nation's view of what they do with SWAT. After this incident, put a nail in the coffin of how things were done in the past. In this instance, I don't think anything else could have been done. It was too late. It already had it too well planned out. But anyway, the first trooper made it to the schoolhouse and starts calling for help. The SWAT team is 15 minutes away. The SWAT supervisor is the person that held the seminar that I went to. And in talking about it, I mean, he still feels guilty about some of the things that took place. He's on the road, he's saying he's going 90 miles an hour. He knows, and he's calling for SWAT people to get to the situation. He's calling for them on the phone, get here, we need your help. While he was there, while he was on the phone, while he's in the process of calling, the state trooper who is there in front of the schoolhouse says, give me permission to go in. I want to go in. I need to help him. The commander said, no, do not go in. And that was according to SWAT policy at that time. You know, you surround the place, you do all this other stuff, but you don't go in. And so this trooper did not go in. In the meantime, probably in that period of time, Roberts nailed all these doors shut. And he did it with 2x6s. There was no way to get in that. The windows were barred from the inside. And looking at the forensic pictures that he displayed, besides it being a mess, you can see that how he had those doors barred, the windows barred, there wasn't getting in those windows or doors. The fact is, when the shooting takes place, the first trooper steps up to the window that has bars on it. He grabs the bars and tries to jerk them off. He's having a hard time doing it then with all the adrenaline rush. He finally is able to do that to try and get inside. It was already too late. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The supervisor gets there. He keeps calling for SWAT. In the meantime, this Roberts gets on, they get his cell phone number because he's called somebody. The fact is, he calls 911 and tells him to keep the cops away and start shooting people if they didn't do it. And so they called him back on his phone. In the meantime, he's trying to call his wife. Sick fuck. And so they get a hold of him and want to talk to him. You know, that's what SWAT does. They want to talk to him. They go, ain't gonna be nothing. They say, I want to talk to you. If you get away from the house, or I said, I mean, SWAT, I'm going to start shooting people. What he had done is he's taken each of those, I guess there was 10 girls there at that time, and tied them down to those eyebows that he had nailed to the chalkboard, and then on the floor near the chalkboard in the front of the building. He'd already tied them up, hands, feet, tied them to the thing, to the eyebows. Right after he did that, he bolted and did the windows and stuff. He then pushed all the chairs aside to that back window, back door, so nobody could get in there, and nailed those in place so they couldn't be pushed inside. He did the same thing to the front door. Ain't no getting in that schoolhouse, there wasn't any. For some reason, he did not molest any of the kids. That's what his purpose was, that's why he went there. He was all prepared to do that. Maybe the response was so quick, maybe things, he just got out of his control, or he got control. But within 25 minutes of the first initial call, everything was over with. What he did, and what took place with the girls, is that Roberts told them, look, whenever you'll have sex with me, I'll let you go. The six-year-old girl said, if you have sex with me, then that can go. And then her friends told her what sex was. She didn't know. And then she said, no, I can't do that. And then the two older girls, the 12 and 13-year-old, told him, shoot us first. Their hope or desire was that if he shot them, that he would let the rest of them go. That is what happened. The medical examiner who started the examination on some of the bodies as they first came in, they were shot in the head. But what they later found out is he used a shotgun. He wanted to make sure they were dead. In the first coroner to look at the first body, lost it. Said, I can't do these. I can't do these. And so they had to call in some other coroners and medical examiners to do it because of what the bodies looked like. Several girls didn't survive. You would think being shot at, all of them were shot in the head. You would think being shot in the head, that wouldn't happen. I've been working in South Dallas, I guess, about 3 years. One night we got a call about a shooting that was in progress, and we made it to the call. When we got there, we drove up. There was this old Pontiac that was backed up against this barbed wire fence, and the woman obviously had her foot on the accelerator, and so the tires were just burning. And we stepped inside, turned the car off, and she'd been shot in the head. She'd been shot in the front of the head. And so we called for the ambulance was on the way there. She had her little 4-year-old daughter. I went over there and sat on the steps to talk to her for a while. Let on the woman in the ambulance to take off. I thought she's dead. 6 months later, I'm making another call at the next call, and I walk into this room, and this woman is sitting on that couch. Okay. Do I know you? I mean, were you in a shooting about 6 months ago? Yeah, I got shot in the head. The bullet went around my brain and went out the backside, and so I survived. It's one of the things that happens with 22 sometimes. So evidently, that's what happened with some of these kids. The bullets didn't necessarily penetrate the brain. In some cases, they did. Those that survived, some that did, some that didn't. The shotgun pellets got all of them to a little extent. But what they found out when they got on the inside, it was not possible to get in that school. It would have been totally impossible. Once that door was closed, once he started loading them, once that Zoot left that window, it was all over. There was no way to get in. That means you would have had to run a bulldozer or pick up or something undecided, but to knock it out, of course you'd be afraid of running over somebody. But it was impossible to get in there, and it took them almost 2 minutes after the shooting started for the officers to get in there. And they started carrying out the bodies, and Some of them were still alive, and the officers were working on them, medical people got there. Medical people had not even got there at the time the shooting took place, they were still on their way. Well, I take it back, they had one ambulance, but it was not a EMT. And so the officers were working on them, trying to save their lives, they got a helicopter to come in to start taking some of the, in fact, they had two helicopters in there to start carrying the live ones who were still alive there. But Roberts himself is not schizophrenic, he is paranoid, or was paranoid, there was a lot of paranoia in his background. And what was later, what later came out, or what he told his wife on the phone, and what he said in the papers that he wrote, was that he had molested two of his cousins 20 years before. And later, talking to the cousins, they had no remembrance of that taking place. He claimed to have done that. He had also claimed to have done some other things. But in the follow-up investigation, the man had planned what he was going to do. He planned where he was going to go to do it. And one of the things is it's very difficult when a person has plans like that in place to stop it or interrupt it. But the only time that you have, the initial time that you have, is the initial seconds in an event. Because the longer the time goes by, the less control you have. If you deserve the control at all from the person, it's in the very beginning. Because if you don't, then that's when all the things, other things, start to take place that you have little or no control of. Questions you'd like to ask about when you have?
Did he shoot himself?
Yes, he shot himself. Too bad he didn't shot himself first instead of last. Yes, most of these people in these school shootings, I mean, in the church shootings, do shoot themselves. There's one that didn't, but he got killed anyway. Most of these people do not do kill themselves. He shot himself in the head with his automatic. When he heard them trying to get in at that point, he'd already killed all the girls, or thought he'd killed all the girls. Is that the, at that point that he shot himself? Brookville, Wisconsin, March the 14th, 2005. This was the Living Church of God. The congregation was being held at a Sheraton hotel. This man walked in. He opened fire on a group. He had two weapons with him, a 22, 9mm. Roberts had a 9mm as well. In fact, there's one thing that's in common. It seems these people love 9mm. So he had a 22 and a 9mm, and he starts shooting. In this shooting, he reloaded the gun once, and continuing shooting, there was probably anywhere from 15 to 20 shots that were that he got off. As many as 60 people were in the church. It was during the church services, actual church services, that it was taking place. In the process of doing the shooting, it's real easy with a 9mm to put your magazine in and then drops. I mean, it doesn't click until it drops out. Evidently, that was one of the things that happened with Rasmussen in the situation in Brookville. He put a fresh magazine in there, shot the first 15 rounds, he starts to reload, puts the magazine in there, and it drops out, and so he has to do another one. There were, I think, seven people that were killed in that shooting. There was five people that were killed in that shooting. There was one survivor, a 10-year-old girl, who survived in that situation. They never knew exactly what his reasoning was. He was seen as a person who the people liked him. He had a garden, and he would give food away from the garden. He was always at church on time. The only thing they could figure out is a week before, the pastor of the church had done a sermon on people that have certain kinds of diseases, that is the problem to go around with, the kinds of problems, the physical problems, and certain mental problems because of the physical problems. Physical problems because of mental problems. Evidently, he didn't like that, and that's what perhaps did precipitate that shooting. They don't know for sure because he didn't live to know or anything. Neosha, Missouri, August 13th, again, 2005. this was a situation where a man, I guess it was a Micronesian church, where a man comes in the middle of church, he walks in the church, and first person he starts shooting is a pastor. I guess that's not very good on pastors. Let me, a side note of that. On February 7th, I was in another workshop or seminar on crimes against women. And I'd gotten up and walked back before things had started, and there was this man who walked in with a camera like that, and he was going to tape the session and stuff like that. I told you I made social, I walked back there not to talk. I walked back there to stand because I was starting to sit already. And he starts the conversation with me. It turns out that he runs this place up in Minnesota where they teach police officers about homicide investigations, particularly with serial killers. And as he was talking about it, I didn't invite this conversation. He's talking about it and he says, by the way, where's the bad area of town in Dallas? I looked at him, it's South Dallas. And he says, well, I was thinking about getting a taxi and driving down there and do some filming. And I said, okay, you can do that if you want to, but if I was you, I'd take me a gun with me. And he went and sat down, and I thought about that a while, and I thought, that wasn't very nice of me. So I went back and told him, you know, lunchtime, if you're here at this, you know, down here at the thing, I'll take you into South Dallas and let you do some filming. So we drove down to South Dallas, and he filmed all this stuff, and talked about some things for a while. And then we got around to church shootings. And one of the things he said about that is, you know, you really need a couple people up here. Now, obviously, he was Catholic, because you need a couple people up here who's like, to protect the priest. And I thought to myself, protect the priest? Most ministers in this area would not be interested in being protected themselves. They wouldn't want the congregation being shot. But I thought he just sort of had it backwards. That may or may not be true. I don't know. If I'm standing up there preaching, I might not want to get shot. I don't know. But I think I'd rather be shot myself than have somebody shooting up the people I'm trying to deal with. Anyway, in this case in Missouri, I can't even pronounce the man's name. No, I guess I can. Salmon. Shot five people. Three of them died. Two of them survived. And his background was that he had sexually assaulted, had been convicted of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old, and he was suspected that there was a lot of child molestation in his background where he molested other children, and perhaps somebody had found out, and perhaps, in this case, the pastor had accused him or talked to him about it, and so he goes in, again with a 9mm, and starts shooting people. Kills three, wounds two. There was in 2003, up in Detroit, there's a woman that's killed in a church shooting. The Zion Hope Missionary Baptist Church, 13-year-old woman is wounded, she's killed, and her little girl who's sitting next to her is wounded. In this case, Williams is a shooter. He goes into church. They're not sure what. There's been a domestic that's been surrounding this situation. Again, the pastor's going to be shot. Gets shot, gets killed. Along this woman, there's three or four people that's involved. Again, church service is going on. He walks in. Guess who's supposed to be standing at the door looking for people with guns? You people, the ushers. I don't know what name. He walks in, pulls a gun, starts shooting. The woman is killed, and the pastor's killed, and a couple other people killed. Again, Bannon County, Sash, a couple years ago, a man goes in and, well, in fact, he lives across the street from the church. And evidently, he gets mad about something. He doesn't go to church. He's not a member there. He doesn't go to church there. His name is Crenshaw. He gets mad about something that's going on at the church. He walks over to the church and takes out a handgun. He's got two weapons. What's the first one?
9mm.
Second one's 38. He's got two weapons. 38 caliber and 9mm. Walks over. Starts shooting people. He kills four, two men and two women right there in front of the church. The church had just let out. He shoots four people. One of them, again, is the pastor. You know, I'm not sure that it pays enough to be the pastor these days. First one to go down is the pastor, then the deacon of the church goes down. Then Crenshaw walks off, and he's walking down the road, reloads his weapon, come to this intersection, and four women who were in a pickup hauling this horse trailer drive up to the stop sign, stops. Crenshaw walks over, shoots him in the head, goes to the other side, shoots the other two in the head, kills all four of them, and then walks over back to his house, goes inside of his house, and lays down to take a nap. SWAT surrounds the place. Oh, by the way, he's expended about 14 rounds in what he's doing. SWAT surrounds the place, tells him to come out, and guess what? There's a shot, and he kills himself. Colorado, we've already talked about, so I won't do that one. What's happened is, in the last 5 to 6 years, there's been 11 major church shootings, and it seems to be happening more and more frequently. It's not something that we can take for granted anymore. It's something you have to watch for. Now, as far as what Jesus has to say in the Sermon on the Mount about this situation, I guess my own personal beliefs are these, and you can carry what you want. If it came down, not as a police officer, I'm sitting in my home, somebody walks in, I have a gun in my hand, there's nobody there but me, do I shoot him, does he shoot me? I think my religion at that point would say, it's okay to kill me. I don't have anybody that I'm responsible for, and so therefore, I'm not going to defend myself. Maybe I would do that, maybe I wouldn't do that. I don't know what I would do. But I think I would probably not do anything. But what I'm saying about that is this. When you are in authority, you're a husband, the wife and children are at risk, somebody's trying to kill them, I think the whole idea of ethics in the Bible is you're there to protect your family. And you have a right and an obligation to do that. The same thing applies to church as far as I'm concerned. If you're in there and you're in the place as a watchman, as a gatekeeper, you're there to protect other people, that's what you're supposed to do. Now, are you carrying a weapon? No. But you might get yourself shot. Should you allow yourself to be shot to save other people? You know, it's not an easy thing to do, but yes, that's what you're there for. You don't like the job, but you could resign. Maybe they could hire some people that would. I say that offhandedly, but it is something that I think each one of you need to give thought to. What are your responsibilities? What are your obligations? If somebody's going to do some killing, and you can stop them or interrupt that process, should you do it? Yeah, I think the Bible says that you have an obligation. Or maybe just if you love others, that you protect them as much as you can. Any questions you'd like to ask about anything that we've covered? I'm about to lose my voice, so I'm going to have to quit. Anything you'd like to ask, we want to know about. You're free to express a different opinion than I've expressed. Anybody want to express a different opinion? It's okay. Yeah, that means you're all going to go out there and start shooting people.
We can tell them you tell us.
But if it became necessary, I'd be willing to.
Are you going to be willing to lay down your life for other people? That is a real big question. Are you willing to lay down your life for other people? And I hope the answer is yes. I hope you don't. Faced with that, I hope you're not faced with that, but I most certainly hope you've reached the conclusion that as a Christian, as a godly person, that's a thing you ought to do. Okay, free to go.
Bye, Brett.
Thank you.